I guess while we're turning to the message, or getting ready for the message, I'd better turn to the right one. I was going to re-preach part one over to you there for a minute. This will be part two of an expose of a media attack. People in the media need to understand that God abhors much of what they do. And I'm sure that most Mediaites don't understand that, but they need to understand that. And those who put their faith in the media need to understand that as well. As a matter of fact, the media's sin is listed as one of the top seven sins that God hates. Turn with me, if you would, to Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs chapter 6, and we'll begin with verse 16. Verse 16, to begin with, it says, "These six things doth Yahweh hate, yea, seven, are an abomination unto him." Now, before we read those seven sins, see if you cannot identify which one of the sins the media is often guilty of. Verse 17, "A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, and heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren." Those are the seven sins that God says He abhors the most. May not have been the list that you would have figured He'd have maybe came up with, but according to as He inspired Solomon to write it, those are the seven sins. Which one do you think maybe was the sin, or is the sin that best describes the media, or at least in many cases often describes the media? Anybody got an idea? Well, you beat me to the punch. You know, I'll tell you this, when I did have one specific sin in mind when this passage came to mind for this message. But as I went through it, I said, they all fit. Every single one of them, in many instances, the media is guilty of. Let's just go through them again. Verse 17, "A proud look." Man, there aren't many that are more haughty, more arrogant than the Mediaites. "A lying tongue." Maybe somebody wouldn't think that fits the media. "And hands that shed innocent blood." And that's the one you might say, well, how does that one fit? Well, I guarantee you, there are times, and there will be times when, because of the media's false reporting, their irresponsible reporting, like what took place, I mentioned it last week, Linda, help me again. Who was it? Dan Rather was the only one I ever come up with. Peter Jennings, what he did with Timothy McVeigh while they're in the very process of trying to come up with an impartial jury. It could be, I don't know whether Timothy McVeigh is guilty or not, but if he's an innocent man, then I'll guarantee you it could be very well put at the hands of that innocent blood will possibly be shed as he is put to death, if indeed he is innocent, because of Peter Jennings and what the rest of the media has done during the preparation for this trial, and I'm sure throughout the trial as it continues to take place. And heart, verse 18, "A heart that deviseth wicked imaginations." Certainly fits the media. "Feet that be swift in running to mischief." Man, the media is the first ones there. And then the one I had in mind, of course, was verse 19 specifically, "A false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among brethren." Look what they do because of how they often portray certain Christian groups. The discord that they spread between them and other brethren because of how they portray them. Every one of the sins, I was surprised. I read through it and I meant, media, I tell you what. If there's people in the media, that doesn't mean that every single person involved in the media is of that ilk. But I'll guarantee you, probably the biggest majority of them are those types of people, or at least responsible for being associated with those type of people and doing nothing about it. Now let me tell you, not only should the perpetrators of the Oklahoma City bombing be thankful that a Christian civil body politic enforcing God's laws and judgments is not enforced today, but so should the media. Because whatever it is that they either hope to inflict upon those upon whom they falsely report upon, or whatever loss, from the loss of reputation to the loss of life, that is incurred as a result of their irresponsible, reckless, false reporting, would be the exact judgment meted out to them for their ninth commandment transgression. Turn with me, if you would, now to Deuteronomy chapter 19. Deuteronomy chapter 19, and beginning with verse 15. We'll read through the end of the chapter. Verse 15, listen carefully. It says, "One witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity." Now, of course, somebody might come back and say, "Well, man, the USA Today reported it, and the Denver Post reported it, and the Scottsbluff Herald reported it, so I guess we've got more than one witness." No, it said not. It says one witness. These guys aren't witnesses. They haven't done their research. Somebody sends them a report on somebody. Do you think they go and check out who's doing reporting and what hidden agenda they might have? Well, it says, "One witness shall not rise up, let alone a non-witness. One witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or for any sin, in any sin that he sinneth, at the mouth of two witnesses, or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. If a false witness," now we're talking about the kind of witnesses that we often have with the media, "if a false witness rise up against any man to testify against him that which is wrong, then both the men between whom the controversy is shall stand before Yahweh, before the priests and the judges, which shall be in those days. And the judges shall make diligent inquisition, and behold, if the witness be a false witness, and have testified falsely against his brother," the media in many cases, "then shall you do unto him or them as he or they have had thought to have done unto his brother. So shalt thou put the evil from among you. And those which remain shall hear and fear, and shall henceforth commit no more any such evil among you. And thine eye shall not pity, but life shall go for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, and foot for foot." I guarantee that under such a government, there would not be the media abuse that we witness so often today. God's law is the answer, even for cleaning up the media, if we'd only apply it. Now, not only is this meant to be an introduction back into the news article that I began an expose on in the previous message, but I don't want the blood of the Midianites. I hope you don't mind me calling them that. That's not to be confused with Midianites, although maybe it should be. But I don't want the blood of the Mediaites on my hands. And I also thought that with that in mind, that the media should be warned. They have a right to be warned about their sins. True, we may not have the aforementioned type of government in place today. However, that does not mean that their sins are going unnoticed. Turn to Proverbs chapter 19, 5 in this regard. Proverbs 19:5. They're certainly not going unnoticed by many of us who have eyes to see what's really going on around us, but they are also not going unnoticed by our God who watches over all. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 5 says, "A false witness shall not be unpunished, and he that speaketh lies shall not escape." And when I read that, I couldn't help of also thinking about Revelation chapter 21 and verse 8. That says, "But the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." True, there may not be a Christian civil body politic functioning today in this country, but God says still you will pay for that sin of false witness. "Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites." And that, of course, goes for anyone who's a false witness, Mediaite or not. We need to take warning that we be not the same. Now, in the previous message, I shared with you several quotes from the protocols. One of them was Protocol Number 3, Article 10, Sentence 1, that reads simply, "The Goyim meaning the Jewish term for non-Jews, the goyim have lost the habit of thinking unless prompted by the suggestions of our specialists, of the elders of Zion, the controllers in many cases of the media, have lost the habit of thinking unless prompted by their specialists. I recently ran across the following, and I thought that it pretty well illustrated the point. When Claude Pepper was running for senator in Florida in 1950, one of his opponents attacked him as follows, quote within a quote, "Are you aware that Claude Pepper is known all over Washington as a shameless extrovert? Not only that, but this man is reliably reported to practice nepotism with his sister-in-law, and he has a sister who was once a thespian in wicked New York City. Worst of all, it is an established fact that Mr. Pepper, before his marriage, habitually practiced celibacy." End of quote. Within a quote, Pepper was defeated by 67,000 votes. Now that's just about how bad it is. The general populace has been dumbed down so much in the 20th century that in some instances the media can even tell the truth in such a way so as to get the dumb goyim, their term not mine, to react as they want. Every one of those things stated about Claude Pepper were either honorable things or at the very least nothing to be ashamed of. He was accused of being a shameless extrovert. He was positive and outgoing. He practiced nepotism with his sister-in-law. Anybody know what nepotism is? I didn't know what it was. Well, yeah, my dictionary said it was an appointment of a relative. Now, it doesn't say whether she wasn't qualified or not. Maybe she was the most qualified one for the position. So he practiced nepotism. He had a sister who was once a thespian. Anybody know what that is? She was an actress. This guy's going to be too sharp, I can tell. She was an actress. And we're talking 1950s. That's not near as bad as being an actress today. And who knows, she may have been a Christian actress. I don't know. But it was his sister. What's that have to do with him? And then the worst of all, prior to his marriage, he practiced celibacy. The man was morally pure. But he was still beat by 67,000 votes. Yeah, boy, this Claude Pepper was one rotten fella. You know, in actuality, I suspect that Mr. Pepper would have probably made a pretty good senator. Since if his opponents could have come up with some legitimate incriminating accusations against him, or some some legitimate indictments, I'm sure they would not have resorted to discoloring the truth about him. What was it that Protocol 12, Article 5, Sentence 1 said, or states? Quote, "Already now we have contrived to possess ourselves of the minds of the Goy communities to such an extent that they all come near looking upon the events of the world through the colored glasses of those specialists, of those spectacles we are setting astride their noses." End of quote. And isn't that what often happens today as well? The media takes innocent, sometimes even righteous situations, and then colors them with shades of vileness, wickedness, and infamy, just for the sake of the story, or possibly because of a hidden agenda of their liberal anti-Christ purposes. I have to tell you that I have more respect for those who are doing it with a hidden agenda than those who do it just for the sake of the story. Well, that was certainly the case with what was scribed, if you will, in Florida a few weeks back. Once again, the title of the news article in the St. Petersburg Times concerning the America's Promise Florida Conference that I participated in with, quote, reputation for racism taints church's welcome, end of quote, specifically with the title referring to America's Promise Ministries. And yet, you know, as I was writing down the title of that in my notes Friday for this message, I thought to myself, yeah, and how did they get that reputation? And how did I get such a reputation, since that accusation is leveled in this article specifically at me? The very next paragraph from where we left off in the previous message says this, quote, among those scheduled to speak, a tax protesting minister from Missouri, a Holocaust revisionist from Idaho, and a Nebraska pastor whom one human rights activist describes as, quote, within a quote, a hardcore racist and anti-Semite, end of quote, with end of quote and end of quote within a quote. A hardcore racist and anti-Semite. Well, I'll get into the deal more with those specific accusations a little bit later in the message. But first note that Mike Wilson, the Times newspaper staff writer who wrote the article, didn't bother to mention his source of information. Just what did he say? Some human rights activist, he says. He didn't bother even mention by name the source of his information. So to begin with, no one knows whether whoever it was who said that about me is, first of all, I guess we don't even know that really somebody did say that. That could have been totally made up. But I suspect they did have somebody who made such a statement. But to begin with, no one knows, being as they didn't mention the source or cite the source of their information, no one really knows whether what this person or whether whoever it was that said this about me is a reputable witness and has legitimate evidence to back up his claims or not. No one knows. Not only that, but as far as any of us really know, this guy could be the real racist. He may have a hidden agenda, someone who hates the white Kelto-Saxon race, or one who hates anyone who audaciously promotes or proclaims authentic Christianity. We don't know, do we? The reader doesn't know. So without knowing who this person is and what his agenda is, it's impossible to know whether he's a credible source of information or not. And, of course, there wasn't a second witness either. Of course, we don't even have a first witness because he was never named. I have no one to take my case against because no witness was ever named. And there certainly was no second witness either. And yet, how many people, how many Christian people in the St. Petersburg, Florida, St. Petersburg, Clearwater area in Florida made a Baal, a god, out of the media in this case and accepted all of that as fact simply because it's found in print in the newspaper? How many? At the very least, they ought to be ashamed of themselves. And, of course, we should too, when we do the same. Because there's times I guarantee we're probably guilty of the same thing because we find it in print, we just thought of it without thinking. And we see, we're dumbed down some too. I'm not just pointing the fingers at everybody else. Sometimes we'll hear something about someone and just automatically, because the way it's painted and the way it's displayed, we find ourselves condemning them on what basis? Nothing. No evidence in most cases. No one really knowing whether what was reported is reputable or not. And so we've got to be careful ourselves as well. Now, according to some human rights activists, quote-unquote, and the media, I'm supposed to be a hardcore racist. Well, would you like to know, I mentioned this in the last message, would you like to know what I had intended to preach on at this conference, had Pastor Barley not specifically requested that I speak on something else? The title that I had in mind was No Room for Racism. Now that sounds like a hardcore racist. a message that would have enlarged upon the following ideas, among others: that race hatred is sinful and ungodly, that under God's law there is to be equal justice for all people, that the Israelites, today found in the white race, and don't have some knee-jerk reaction to that, you don't know, until here just a little bit later, you don't know whether I'm talking about, you don't know whether I might be talking about the Jews or not. You know, everybody's going to react to that. because they don't think. But that I would have enlarged upon the fact that the Israelites found today in the white race were called by God to be a servant race, not a master race, except as His helpmeet, as His bride and His people. And that as the prophet Isaiah declared in Isaiah 56, that the non-Israelite, or if you will, the non-Kelto-Saxon, who joins himself to Yahweh, has a better name before God than does the Israelite or the white Kelto-Saxon man who does the same. What a hardcore racist I really am. You know, it's laughable, this whole accusation. So if all of that doesn't qualify for hardcore racism, then just what is it that I preach or teach that does? Well, I will unashamedly tell you and the rest of the world why I'm accused of racism. I came up with four reasons. First, because I teach today what's known as Christian identity. That is, rather than teaching that today's Jews are today's Israelites, I teach that the Anglo-Saxon, Germanic, Scandinavian, and kindred peoples are the true descendants of the biblical Israelites. Second, because rather than teaching the equality of all races, I emphasize the diversity of all races. Third, because rather than teaching racial multiculturalism, I teach racial separation. And fourth, because rather than promoting miscegenation or the mixing or race mixing, I advocate racial purity. Now, we're talking hardcore racism, aren't we? At least that's how the majority of the goyim, as in using their term again, who can no longer think for themselves, are going to view it. Those who have been excited by the media, Protocol 12, Article 15, Sentence 2. Those who have been excited by the media to react to react to such statements, to such buzzwords or phrases that the media has created or manipulated to generate just such responses. You can almost hear them. Blasphemy! We've now heard it from his own mouth. So what further need do we have of witnesses? Crucify him! Crucify him! Now, not to compare myself in any fashion to Yeshua the Christ. I don't stand worthy to stand in His presence except by the covering of His righteous blood. Except other than in that, as Yeshua declared, that if they persecuted me, or as they persecuted me, you could say, they will also persecute you. And in that the Pharisees and the scribes' tactics haven't changed in 2,000 years. And so without thinking and excited or inflamed by such tactics, the majority of the populace, non-Christian and Christian alike, will respond to what I just declared just as the media and their controllers who have possessed themselves of the minds of the Goy community, Protocol 12, Article 5, Sentence 1, would have them to react. They respond just as they've been taught to respond, in other words. Well, let's see if we cannot remove the colored glasses set astride their noses and help them out of this media-induced, knee-jerk, reactionary state and assist in leading them into a thinking mode. Remember, the protocols back in 1897, They stated the protocols of the learned elders of Zion declared that they can no longer, even back then they were saying, they can no longer think unless prompted by our specialist. But as I pointed out in the previous message, it doesn't take that much. If we learn to ask the right questions of our people, for us to be the prompters, to get them to think in the right direction. So let's see if we can't get them out of this media-induced, knee-jerk, reactionary, mindless state, if you will, and get them to induce them, encourage them, somehow help them, inspire them, our people, to once again think, at least those who might have a chance at hearing this message. Let's take each of my four admissions and let's reason together. Let's reason together about them. First, identity. It's absolutely amazing what the Mediaites have done with this phrase. And hats off to them. I mean, with their agenda, they're doing a great job. When they have listed identity as the number one enemy, top of the list, those who have to be concerned of most, and you understand where they're coming from, when the controllers of the media and many of the majority of those involved with the media are Edomites, descendants of Esau, Edom, who are trying to get back the birthright, trying to get back the blessing, even if they don't know it just genetically, with that genetic imprint on their genes, still trying to take back what they lost to Jacob, Israel, and his descendants, you take their hat off. You take your hat off to them. They realize they're in warfare. They realize what kind of warfare they're in, and a warfare of thoughts and ideologies and all of that, and they're doing a great job. But it's still amazing. Hats off, but it's still amazing to see what they've been able to do, what they've been able to attach to this term, what they are able to conjure up in the minds of their people by just mentioning the word identity. And what's worse yet, how they've been able to enlist Judeo, emphasis intended, how they've been able to enlist Judeo-Christian pastors, how they've been able to enlist them, excite them, inflame them to do their bidding in this regard. For example, several months ago, someone sent me a tape of a radio interview with a pastor, John Terrell, and I intended, from the first time I heard it, to somehow make the time to respond to him, to write him a letter and plead with him to reconsider what he had done and to share with him from my perspective as a Christian Israel pastor where he was so far off base and never got around to it. Just have not had the time. And maybe this is part of my response. I don't know. But I was given this tape of this radio interview of Pastor John Terrell, who in the very beginning of the tape first admitted that he had only studied, quote-unquote studied is how I'm going to say it, the identity message for 1 month. And then after only 30 days, the self-proclaimed expert of the identity message is now being interviewed. And you should know this about him, too. He was also, he had just previously invited to Scriptures for America's first annual pastor's conference held up in Estes Park. He could have got first-hand information. He could have been there and listened to the messages and asked any question he wanted from those who were the preachers and teachers of this message. And he refused to go. And then, after a month of studying the identity message, he went on in this tape to enumerate 15 to 20, and I think it was probably near 20 if my recollection is correct, that pastors, 15 to 20 tenets that pastors like myself are supposed to believe and teach. And as I listened to him, I realized that he was only parroting what the media and or some non-Christian civil rights organization had said to him. There was not one thing. And again, I think there was probably nearer 20 than there was 15. There was not one thing in the list of 20 things that he enumerated that were supposed to represent me and people that he mentioned that I knew, or the vast majority of those whom I minister to. Not one item that I would have taken contention with myself. Things, for example, like we teach. You've certainly heard this from the media. Things like, we teach that all non-white races are mud people. Now, I know some of you have been teaching that because the media says you teach it, now, and you've been hiding it from me, haven't you? But you know what? I got to thinking about that term and how the media likes to throw that around, and preachers that parrot what they say have made a god out of the Mediaites. I got to thinking about that term, and in the 20-plus years that I've been associated with the Christian Israel message, the only place I've heard anyone ever use that term is in the media, or with such pastors who just parrot what the media says. I've never heard. Now, I'm not saying that there are not some, there may not be some, who may be adherents to the Christian identity message, who may not use that term, or other such terms or things that the media loves to represent us with. I don't know. I'm not saying there aren't. I just don't know. But I do know this, that if they are out there, they are such a small minority that I've never run across them. And I get around. I preach in about a dozen states every year. You know, where are they? I've accepted that the media, that there must be people out there because the media said so. Wake up, Ted. Maybe there aren't anybody out there who uses that term. Maybe that has been totally made up by the media. I don't know. But I do know this. That is not a term people use, and it's certainly not a term I would ever use for the other races of people. It's a derogatory, demeaning term. It really is amazing what the media has been able to convince the populace concerning identity and what it concerns. For example, listen to this news article. It first associates us, of course, now with one of the new buzz terms is the Phineas priesthood. I guess there are people out there who are claiming to be the Phineas priesthood. Again, I haven't run into any. Any of you been saying that under your breath? Never run into anybody who's claimed to be of the Phineas priesthood. But I suspect that there probably are some who do that. But here's what the article said. Quoting Robert Crawford, research director for the Coalition of Human Dignity in Seattle. Quote within a quote, it says, "The Phineas priesthood," listen to this, "the Phineas priesthood is an honor that is bestowed on a Christian identity believer who commits a racist or anti-Semitic or anti-gay murder." End of quote within a quote, Crawford said, end of quote. Now, have you ever heard such nonsense? And yet, because it's in print and their media God has spoken, it will be gospel truth. I use the term on purpose. It will be gospel truth to a great many media mind slaves. Let me make this as clear as I can. Let me just set the record straight as far as this preacher in this pulpit and the people I preach to are concerned. Numbers 25 does not provide justification for any Phineas priesthood for today of any kind, for any vigilantism of any kind, or for the putting to death of anyone by any individuals today or any group of individuals. There is no justification. Now, that's not to say, again, that there are not some mere brain-dead individuals who believe that it does. But they certainly do not represent the vast majority of Christian Israel adherents, as the media and these quote-unquote human right activist groups would love to have you believe that they do, any more than such individuals who may be Mormons or Catholics would represent the Mormon or Catholic churches. It's ridiculous. Matter of fact, out of the three men who are supposed to be, and I don't know whether they are or not, it may be just something the government's attached to them, it may be that they're being framed for something they never did, I don't know. But with the three men who are up in Washington, who are supposed to have committed these crimes, bombings of banks and so forth, as under the guise of the Phineas priesthood, if they had, then they're the near brain dead individuals I'm talking about. But if indeed they have done that, one of them would probably call himself an identity believer. One is a Mormon and one is a Catholic. And that's why I use those three terms. But you know what? The Catholic Church and the media wasn't attacked. The Mormon Church wasn't attacked in the media. No, there was just one church, Pastor Dave Barley's America's Promised Ministries, a Christian identity ministry. That was the only one that was mentioned in the media. Well, if identity, it is amazing the media is able to accomplish all of that, do all that with the term, and hopefully you're starting to see that it's about as viable as I can't come up with a good enough illustration. But if it's not all of that, if it's not what the media has led so many to believe that it is, then just what is identity? Well, get rid of your knee-jerk reaction. Just put that aside and just ask yourself, what does the word identity, start thinking, imply? As far as I'm hoping, and I'm not speaking, you guys have already graduated beyond this, but I'm hoping that I'm going to get this message to some people who need to be prompted, who need to be inspired to start thinking, and so I'm not talking down at you here. But what does the word identity imply? This is real hard. But, you know, it's amazing. As simple, and of course I was being sarcastic. It's so simple, and yet people can't think, even come up with the simple things. What does it imply? Identification. The correct identifying of something, someone, or a group of people. Christian identity is simply a theological position taken up by basically fundamental Christians who believe that when it comes to today's Israelites, that there has been, a case of mistaken identity. That the Israelites today are not who most people believe that they are, but are instead someone else. That's it. Now ask yourselves, is there something inherently evil with that? Now, it may be that we're wrong. I mean, people are deceived all around the world on all kinds of issues. It may be that we're wrong, that we are sincere, but that we're wrong, that it's us who's making the mistake in identity. But don't we have the right to make that mistake? What do you think? No, we do not. That's the one area of identification in the world today where we don't have the right to delve into it without being labeled racist, white supremacist, and anti-Semites or worse. But if you're one of those individuals, that's all of a sudden the light bulb is beginning to turn on, and you're beginning to think for yourself, you ought to be wondering why. Isn't that logical? Why is it that all we've stated is there's been a case of mistaken identity and it's so vile that we would do so? Why is it racism or white supremacy for a white European or an American to declare that there has been a case of mistaken identity by the Jews, but it's not racism or white supremacy for the Jews, who are essentially white in skin color? That's a light bulb that never goes off either. It's only white when the Celto-Saxons do it, it's only white supremacy when the Celto-Saxons do it, not when the Jews do it. But why is it not racism or white supremacy for the Jews to declare that there's been a case of mistaken identity by Christian identity believing Celto-Saxons? Why the double standard? Well, I'll tell you why. Because the Celto-Saxons are not those who have the media working as their minions and who have much to lose if this imposterous hoax is ever uncovered. And so those who do have much to lose malign and slander anyone who has the irrefutable, biblical, archaeological, historical, and anthropological evidence to unmask their true identity so as to keep the people from listening to them. You don't want people to listen. I mean, what people in their right mind are going to listen to racist and white supremacists and Phineas priesthoods and all of these other things that they've made buzzwords out of? Hats off to them. They've done a marvelous job on their side of the fight. It's time we get in the battle. And Paul again said to Timothy, we need to start warring a good warfare. Ask yourselves, why else? Why are they in such an attack mode against people who are simply declaring there's been a case of mistaken identity? Secondly, let's think about, let's reason together about my admission that rather than teaching the equality of all races, that I teach the diversity of all races. Now, because we in the 20th century in this 20th century multicultural society have been media blitzed that such teaching is racist, that is hateful, with a bent toward race, the destruction of all the other races, nearly everyone, without thinking, accepts that that is exactly what it is. But I believe that once the average person has thought it through, when they've unshackled themselves from the slaves of the media, the promptings of only their specialists, that when the average person has thought it through, that they will conclude that it's the exact opposite, and that it's the egalitarians who are actually the true racists and who hate the other races and are bent toward their destruction. And keep in mind what Isaiah forewarned us of. In Isaiah chapter 5, and I think it's verse 20, he says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who substitute bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter and light for darkness and darkness for light. They're adept at taking what is good and making it bad. And the Mediaites are the ones who are the best at it. Ask yourselves, think, which position is more race conscious? One that celebrates racial differences? Or one that attempts to destroy all racial differences? And that attempts to make us all into one amalgamated brown race? Think, which is more race conscious? Which promotes the races more and their individuality and their cultures more? Race diversity or race equality? I believe that every race is both inferior and superior to other races in different specific areas. Only those with a one-world globalist mentality will tell you differently, and only those afraid of being labeled as politically incorrect or worse will not admit that that's true. You're either a liar or you're a coward if you won't admit it. If you want a living example, you only need to go as far as your local college or professional basketball court for a living example of the fact of, inescapable proof of racial superiority and inferiority. It's inescapable. Now, if that's race hatred to believe that, then 90%+ of all Americans are racist. Because I'm quite confident that when pressed, they believe just as I do. As a matter of fact, I'll go so far as to say that 100% of all Americans, even those with an agenda that dictates that they must label it racism, believe the same. Because when the facts are presented, as simple as a basketball court, in the 20th century. It's inescapable. All races have superior and inferior characteristics when compared to other races. But it's only racism when the white man points it out. Well, as we can see by the time, I'll have to finish up with my last two admissions in another message. But hopefully in this short series, exposing the tactics of the media and their controllers has already, that this short series, these first two messages, has already begun to help some people to finally think for themselves. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 21, Paul admonishes us to prove everything carefully. And if there was ever a place that needs to be applied, it's in the media. Break loose, if you haven't. Free yourselves from the mind-controlling grip of the mediaites. Yes, it's true. You might have to take some flack for doing so, but let me tell you, the benefits far outweigh the drawbacks. It's a part of your freeing yourself of the chains. Free yourself, Israel, from the chains that bind you. Let's go to our Father in prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you, we praise and glorify you once again for your goodness and mercies to us. Lord, thank you for your word and its inspiration to us. And Father, I pray for those, Father, of our people who need to be yet awakened. And Father, who yet need to see that they're not only slaves economically today, politically and in other ways, but even mentally, Father, enslaved to the mediaites and their tactics. Use these messages, Lord. Turn what was intended to be something that would be negative, that was done with evil intent. Turn it around and let it be used, Father, to awaken and enlighten our people and to bring many, Father, to the foot of the cross of Christ as a result. We praise and we glorify you and we ask this now in Yeshua the Christ our Lord. Amen.